Hello, friends. Welcome to the Focus to Evolve podcast, where we uncover modalities, habits, and technologies that enable people, teams, and organizations to break the unhealthy trance of busyness and evolve into a calm, deliberate, and healthy way of accomplishing far more in less time. Hey, Elaine, welcome to the Focus to Evolve podcast. How are you today?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. You know, you are a person that in my life, I notice when I walk in any room where you are, the vibration goes higher, it gets brighter, and everyone's smiling. That's what you really do. I've never seen such a contagious energy, and I'm so glad to have become friends with you. So welcome, and thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Jason. The privilege is mine. You know, I've had that before. I know my essence is quite strong. It's been described in many ways more than one, which I might not maybe bring up on this conversation. But either way, there's something about my spirit that tends to attract others, and I'm cognizant of that gift and thankful for it as well.
Yeah, it's a superpower. And how cool that you have awareness of your superpower. And you're like, yeah, well, I'm just going to be me. I'm going to go all the way.
You know, it's funny because I, up until about 5 years ago, I wasn't as aware as I am now. I think I always had a feeling that there was something about my smile that was just warm and inviting, and that was just about it. But I think the more you explore certain things is the more you discover the power behind it. And I think in the last 5 years is when I've kind of come to this point where I've recognized that there's something about my smile and my spirit. And a lot of that has evolved through my own personal journey and my own transformation as a person as well. Recognizing my own value and being more thankful for what makes me different and unique, and being okay with it. I think that inside connection to self has allowed that to manifest itself in, I think, externally in a way that others are warm and receptive to it. I think that's the best way I could describe it.
I'd say that's dead on from experiencing you and all, you know, different places where we run into each other, and it is exactly right. So can I ask you, when you say you explored self to find, you know, these wonderful things within yourself. Tell me a little bit about that journey, if you could. How can anybody, what's the template, what's the blueprint for finding yourself?
That's a very good question, Jason. I think it goes as far back as to your first moment of existence. If there's a way that your brain can comprehend that, as far as back as you can go, at least for me, I had to do that. Remember, I grew up in Kenya, and I tell the story of how you really can't connect a dot from where I was born to where I am and what I do now. To others, it's an impossible story. To others, it's an impossible quest. For me, as a child growing up, if you had mentioned that I would be who I am today, doing what I do, having interacted with who I have interacted with, doing the work that I do and having the network that I have, I would have bet you more than $1 million that wouldn't be me. You know, the trajectory for a girl like me who was born in the middle of nowhere in Africa, I'm supposed to be maybe the fifth wife of some chief and maybe dead with HIV/AIDS. That would be my profile.
I really want to pause on that, because right, what an impossible journey. Tell us about your village in Kenya, or, you know, I don't even want to use any words. Just tell us about your upbringing, where you were born, and then just we'll juxtaposition that where you are now, like amazing work in the world at the highest levels. So yeah, tell us about, start at Kenya. I mean, no one has experience like this that I know. So share with us.
Of course, Jason, when I tell my kids the story, they think I have seven heads.
I believe it.
Because I am literally one of those girls that you potentially could think of as a poster child, but more than that, yeah? If you talk about running around barefoot, that was me. Going to the river to get water, that was me. Taking cows down the river where they're drinking water and you're also doing your laundry and jumping in the same, you know, stream for a shower, that was me. Tilling the land. So I grew up on a farm. in a place called Kisii in East Africa, near Lake Victoria, near the border of Tanzania and Uganda. And life was simple. It was so simple that others looking in would think we lacked so much. But for me, my life was so rich because all I needed was love and family. It didn't matter what material things we had, right? And so that was really my upbringing, quite simple. We grew what we ate. We drank milk from our cows. The boys and the girls had equal duties. Now, I have to mention this, that my parents literally were ahead of their time in terms of their thinking, because in addition to the village life, they really exposed us to an education. My mom was an educator, and that helped quite a bit. My grandfather interacted with English missionaries and spoke English. As a result, my mom spoke English, and she went to a missionary school and became an English teacher. Now, you have to remember, in the village, people spoke Kisii. So English was not my first language. And they spoke Swahili. And then English was like the third language, yeah? Now, because my mom was an English teacher, we spoke all three languages at the same time. Literally, I'm not kidding. When I talk to my mom now, when our conversation, if you listen in, we go back and forth. Like, the first line might be in Kisii, the second line in Swahili. People look at me like, that's crazy. What did you just do? What did you just say? And then they pick an English word here. So my kids are always very intrigued with my conversations with my mom. But that's how she literally taught me three languages at the same time. Yeah. So most of my peers in the village really don't even speak English, let alone, you know. So for me, that was the biggest gift that my parents gave us, is the idea that we could have this authentic village life that was so simple, so easy. And our diet was so good. Now, looking back then, oh my God, like everything, nothing was processed. Just on I desire and long for that food here in America and that lifestyle. Anyway, and I wondered, I often wondered, because the nearest hospital was like 6 hours away, like major hospital. But these women raised their kids in the village. My mom had 8 of us, right? Without worrying, like I would in my case, where's the nearest emergency room for my 2 kids? My mom, for whatever reason, they had home remedies, yeah, for us, but food was medicine for us. So they paid attention to our diet so much so that rarely were we sick. But when we were, they somehow found home remedies for that before they even rushed us to hospital. So it was a different kind of upbringing, right? And so if you take that, I think what really positioned me to compete on a world stage was the strong foundation, the strong educational foundation that my parents gave us. Yeah, they valued girls and boys as well. My mom and dad had 5 of us, ma'am, you know, and this is it's a time in Africa when most Africans would be marrying off the girls, you know, but my parents were investing in our education instead of thinking about marrying us off. So a shift there. So they were forward thinking in that sense and quite helpful for us. So it made us strong. All 5 of us are strong. We're leaders where we are now because of that confidence that we gained from the support that they gave us. Yeah. But also my dad even paid my school fees, which was literally like an honorable thing to do, because most fathers in my tribe would be wanting to make dowry out of their girls. In other words, make money out of them, not invest money in them. So my dad was doing the exact opposite of what most traditional men would do, given our traditions and our culture. So I was lucky in that sense. So luck had a lot to do with it, as much as choice and who my parents were. And that positioned me enough to compete within an education system that was a byproduct of colonialism in Kenya. So the British left very strong institutions, and I'm a beneficiary of that. I'm not afraid to say that. So a combination of that, I think, positioned me well enough to be able to think outside of my village and to desire more. So as a child, I've always been curious. Remember, a friend of mine recently told me there's 3 things that you need, Aline, to live a long life. And one of them is, of course, always finding humor in everything. The other one was keeping a positive mindset. And the third one, he said, curiosity. Stay curious. You know, for me, I've never lacked that third one, because as a child, I've always been curious, curious about everything around me, the world beyond my village. And so that curiosity is what set the template for where I landed for my father's studies. That's how I ended up in America, because I kept thinking, okay, as much as I love my village, I want to be a leader of some sort. I feel like I have all this much love to give, all this power to unleash within me, but I need a stage. And I don't know whether it's a wild stage, but I just need a global platform of some sort. So in my mind, without realizing subconsciously, I was creating one for myself. And so what ended up happening is, you know, as you know, we talk about manifesting, I think I didn't even realize there's a word for it, but I was practicing it way before I even had the word itself, you know, because I had all these desires in my heart about where I wanted to go, where my spirit wanted to land. And somehow by manifesting subconsciously on all of those desires, somehow the universe was putting all these people in my life. You know, my mentors, for example, that was no accident that my biggest mentor when I went to law school in Kenya was an international law scholar who had done his PhD at Tufts, that was encouraging me to look at Tufts as an option and Case Western Reserve University Law School as an option for higher ed for me. And that's how I ended up in the US, by the way, and outside of Kenya. And I think for me, that was a turning point in the shift, right? So this village girl who somehow didn't even know that America was an option, suddenly I find myself in the US because I'm pursuing an education and I'm being supported and encouraged by my mentors to do that because they're seeing all this potential in me. And at that point, I'm viewing a career in international law at that point because I'm thinking I am an African, yes, but I have this global mindset and I want to figure a way to connect the two, you know. So that's really how my life kind of evolved to a point where I land in the US, yeah. And then I end up doing a bunch of things that I do now over the last 20 years, which is kind of crazy, right? My whole life is a big transformation, if you ask me. I have like maybe, Jason, I probably have like 9 books in me that need to be published because it's the story of the little girl and their journey. There's a story of Aline the professional. There's a story of Aline the social experiment, because I end up living in Maine, raising my kids in Maine, a very white homogeneous state. But then the revelation of the support that I get there is so unique and so different, at a perspective that most Americans need to hear, especially people of color, because Maine never seems to be an option for them. Yet it could be, depending, you know, on how they look at it. And that's another whole story that remains to be told. So my life has been crazy like that, Jason. And then, of course, it overlaps with yours through this unique experience that we have at Authentica. And that, I learned that as a result of me just now having gone through this whole journey of exploration, realizing that that transformation was needed. But at the same time, I needed to really fully determine and understand who I was throughout my whole journey. And I got to the point where I realized that there was no way to separate the two, because when I did, then I wasn't living a full life. So I had to at one point really sit down and meditate and think, how does my childhood come into play? Because in moments, there were moments where I would recognize that. There were days when I would be in a board meeting, literally trying to come up with a strategy for a complex legal solution when I worked as a consultant in a law firm, for example. And honestly, in my mind, I was that little girl again, navigating through the jungles of Africa. I was literally tapping into the same exact skill that I'd honed, right? And in that moment, I'm like, oh my God, that's value. That's something that it's not distinctive and separate. It's a part of who I am. It's a part of what informs my thinking. And it's what makes me so unique that others want me in the room. Because when my perspective is unique, different, and I have this outside of the box thinking mechanism that I can unleash, that others appreciate, then it's important for them to understand where that is coming from. So I had to go through, and believe in me, it wasn't an easy place to land mentally, because you have to remember, I grew up in a continent that once was ravaged by colonialism. And colonialism is not just a word. It's mental brainwash, right? That transcends generations, where you're taught anything that's white, that's blonde is better, that Black thinking is inferior to Western thinking. So you have to mentally overcome that to be able to fully understand your full potential, right? You don't realize it affects you until you are in situations where you're walking into a room, for example, like it happened at a board setup where I'm a board member, equally like others, and I'm sitting there and I'm catching myself making an apology for something. I remember one of my colleagues who's African American calling me outside of the room and asking me, Arin, what's wrong with you? Why are you apologizing? You looked around the room. Did you see anyone else apologizing? No. If anything, they should be lucky to have you in there. This is a volunteer position, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, she had to remind me in that moment that, look, and I knew where that was coming from, because in my society, when we grew up around the remnants of that system, part of it is you're taught to be like very quiet, very timid, very, very submissive. Apologize more than you actually say something, you know, because you that moment is not needed, or it's not an affordable moment for you, or you don't deserve that moment. So there's a little bit of brainwash there that you have to kind of overcome to get the sense of no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter about, it's not about color here, honestly. And when I say black, I don't mean the color of our skin, Jason. I mean the system that is in place that you have to overcome. So in my mind, it was a bunch of internal battles that I had to fight to get to that point where there's a level of comfort and understanding, a full understanding. And I'm 45 years now. I think I'll be fair to say that evolution has been accelerated in the last 10 years. I could see where the journey began, but I see where the acceleration happened. And that acceleration happened because of, I reached a point where I needed to reevaluate my life. And at that moment, what really helped me, Jason, and you're very good at this, this is where you and I connect, you know, having what we call professional meditations, where you just, you know, you meditate, you really take time to fully meditate about your career and who you are and how those two connect. And the more you open up and strip yourself bare to the bare bones, as far as who you are as a person, the better you are as a CEO. So I had to literally go through that process. I had to confront a lot of my past. I had to literally do what Talk Better campaign really is pushing for right now, which is a lot of Talk Better mechanisms such as positive reinforcement. Yeah. Speaking a lot of positive things about who I am, my ability, and what I can do, and reminding myself that those have always been a part of who I was. Only I wasn't embracing them enough, or connecting to them enough, or allowing myself to celebrate those things enough.
We'll be right back after this brief message.
The Jim Stroud Podcast explores the discoveries and trends forming the future of our lives. Brain-to-brain communication, robot bosses, microchip implants for workers, and artificial intelligence replacing human workers are all happening now. If you want to know what's happening next, subscribe now to the Jim Stroud Podcast.
Welcome back to the Focus to Evolve Podcast. Going back to your... where you were a little girl, all the way up through to where you are now and all you've done. Like, if we were to kind of look at that little girl that you tap into, the one that's running around barefoot, being creative, being courageous. My wife teaches a yoga practice for women only, where she helps women to get back to that confidence that girls had at, I think, the age of 7 is when a girl's confidence peaks. And from 7 years on, a confidence declines. And it's based on culture and generational this and that. And so a lot of what you were saying was resonating with that. But as I just kind of listened to your story there and where you came from and the wisdom that was in that village, this simple and easy, the love and the family, you knew that was the real stuff. You weren't distracted. And this kind of like a wonderful level of authenticity was going on. And real genius is found there. When you are connected, when you're feeling love of those who you love, when you're with family, with chosen friends, and you're authentic, that's where genius explodes. And it is, it's like reconnecting to the child, the one that didn't pick up all the culture of the society and really didn't feel the generational and systemic atmosphere yet. And this stillness to get back to there is one of the things I coach on when I come into, you know, large companies or small companies. I'm like, okay, we're going to do the stillness thing. And it's wait till you see what comes out. Like genius doesn't, it's not a person is not genius. A person, it's not a thing that's stagnant. All humans have genius that is in them and allowed to come out when you reconnect to yourself. And that's what I love teaching. And you've just backed it up so wonderfully. And it really does take courage. The other thing I found, I'd like you to comment more on, is this concept of being curious outside of your proverbial village. So any listener of this, whether it's your office, whether it's your home, whether it's your family, whether it's your company, how can a person crack out of the invisible kind of adherence or resonance that we fall into when we're with particular crowds? How can you be curious of the world beyond your proverbial village? Talk a little bit about that. What's your go-to to crack out when you need to?
I think for me, it has a lot to do with thinking outside of yourself. And for me, that comes naturally, because what feeds my soul is when I see others elevated, I see others inspired. And so it's easy for me, I guess, to how can I put it? So curiosity becomes in almost naturally as a byproduct of that, if that makes any sense. So when you think outside of yourself, then you're thinking, okay, there's that thing or that person, and I don't know much about them. I want to know more. I'm interested. I'm intrigued. What are they all about? What is this thing about? And how does that relate to me personally or to what I'm trying to do? So that has always been my case. And I'll be honest with you. So my dad was more of a strategist. He was the guy who was behind the scenes under the table. I joke about him being part of the kitchen cabinet of high administration in Kenya, but you would never see his name anywhere, right? But I knew he influenced a lot of the decisions that were being made. Why? Because I saw him in action in our home and in the homes that he visited. Now, when these meetings were happening in our home, for whatever reason, I would sit in and listen, and they would not kick me out of the room. Usually they would say, kids, get out of here, you know, do that. And my dad was that forward thinking, because he knew, he understood my curiosity, because I was like, what are these adults talking about? It's got to be something new, something important, something intriguing. And so that actually has translated to choices that I've made in my life. All of my friends, Jason, are older than me. In fact, the youngest one is 10 years older than me, and they're my best friends. Why? Because I've always found something intriguing about experience and people who've lived longer, because I'm constantly learning from them or avoiding their mistakes, because they're constantly telling me the things that they did wrong. And they're telling me, if you can learn from my mistake, why not? So my curiosity is also piqued through that decision that I made from when I was a baby. That for me, it made sense that my friends were always older than me. Now, I'm not discrediting my peers or people who are my age mates, but I'll tell you what my experience has been. My peers are either my competitors or they're trying to bring me down.
Oh, no.
That's the reality of the world we live in. And if you talk about corporate America, it's brutal and it's nasty. That's the reality of it. Yeah, there's a bit of that. So I'm trying to get away from that environment with the work that I do now and the choices of projects that I manage right now. But at the same time, we still have to play in a world that's kind of intense, right? So yeah. So I think for me, how I maintain that level of curiosity is I deploy simple things that people don't even think to do that are the most important. And the number one thing that even my grandmother, my mother, and anyone who's mentored me has always told me, Aline, there's a reason why God gave you one mouth and two ears, you know? They always repeat that. They said, listen more, talk less when you're in the presence of others. Try to listen more and talk less. When you do that, you understand them better. You form better relationships, yeah? And if they do the same to you, then that's a perfect relationship, right? So I tend to do that with my friends. And by listening more, listening is a key ingredient for curiosity itself, if you think about it, yeah? Because if you're curious about something, of course, we can learn through other mediums now. I mean, there's technology, there's, you know, podcast. You can do everything. You can self-feed and self. But for me, really, at the core of all of it, as much as we love technology, for me, I love the idea of relationships, of human relationships. And I pray, I'm so traditional in that sense that I pray that element never disappears, even with the age of AI. I don't want to be communicating over a microchip with you, Jason, like we're standing in the same room and I'm just busy pushing buttons on my hand or something, you know. I still want to be able to have a real conversation like we're doing right now. And I want to be able to do that as the basis of formulating any new relationship or maintaining an old one. And so for me, if I think about the key ingredients for curiosity is, of course, it's helpful when you're a really good communicator because that sets the tone. But listening is a key ingredient. The most important thing is genuine curiosity also comes from genuinely wanting to love and understand. So those key values that make you human, being polite, being kind, being tolerant, being understanding, they all come into play. So when you feel my aura when I walk into the room, Jason, it's me channeling all of those values at the same time. Because for me, I have my guiding star and I have my five words that guide me. Yeah, this is an exercise I learned from a mentor of mine. He said, Aline, every beginning of year, I pick one word that becomes my anchor and my north star and guides me through the year. So he's 90 years old. I won't say his name on air because he might be embarrassed. But he said, my word this year is selfish. And I said, oh, that's a good word. He said, yeah, I've lived to be 90. I've spent all of my life, you know, taking care of others. Now I need to focus on myself. I'm like, that's a good word. And then I said, you know, I told him, I said, look, for me, I've always had three words that have been my North Star, right? It's inspire, elevate, and illuminate. But when you think about those three words, it's all about giving, right? Because I've always said, whatever I do, it has to be uplifting and it has to inspire others. And for me, I like the name of my company, Global Tides Consulting, because a tide comes and when we rise, we all rise together, you know? So I've always said, as I'm rising, I want others to rise with me. So those three have always guided me. But he reminded me something. He said, but Aline, what about you? Because that curiosity is sending you down this path where you're constantly thinking about others. What about you? So I had to come up with two other words that cover me. So the other two are self-care. And the second one was, I came up with three. So self-care, priorities, and focus. So you're going to love the third one, right?
Yeah, so, love all
so,
of them.
Because so, I realized that I do all of these things. I'm passionate about a lot of things, but I can't do them all. I need to focus. I need to narrow down my focus. And then the self-care became number one. So I reordered everything. And number one was self-care because it's the one thing that I ignored the most over the years. And now it's become my focus. So if you think about it, so for me, how do you really think about curiosity? I think of it about it only holistically now. So it's not just one thing. It's a combination of everything I'm describing now, right? So my curiosity is now, I channel it, but I have these five pillars that guide and drive that curiosity so that it's a little bit more channeled and focused, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a long answer to a very simple question.
No, but it was all necessary. And I was going to ask you, cause I know you've been through a lot of ups and downs and extreme ones. And I was going to ask you like, what got you through the tough times? But I have a hunch that what you just responded for curiosity is probably the exact thing that gets you through the darkest of times.
That's a fair assumption and a true one. And I would add to that and say this, in my darkest moments, I think my faith and my friends have been my my anchor, I guess. I think my friends, my faith, that's where it starts. And then it builds up to everything else I described the last 5 minutes. Yeah, because you have to remember, it goes to relationships, yeah? So what's that phone call that you're making at 3 a.m. when you're hitting a crisis point? Who are you calling first, right?
Yep.
Who do you think is going to pick up that phone call to have that conversation in a way that helps you? It really goes back to relationships and understanding the connection that you have with that person that gives you that level of comfort to have that conversation.
Yeah. And then, you know, once you kind of have that and you're getting on your feet, I'm sure there's this whole thing around grit. Like it, you have to hang in there. This is a long life. And tell me a little bit about grit in your relationship with, sometimes you're pushing it up the hill and sometimes it's rolling down the hill. Talk a little bit about that.
I know. It feels like in the last 10 years, I've been pushing up the hill more than I'm rolling down the hill. Right. But my kids and I have favorite quotes, and one of them is, show me someone who hasn't faced adversity and I'll show you a weak person. So we've learned to embrace adversity, and we actually, we are worried when we don't have enough because it means, because growth and strength comes from enduring something. Yeah. It really is. It doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a sporting event or, you know, it's a passion of life that you have. You know what gets you stronger is overcoming something. Yeah, so grit is a favorite word of mine, just like resilience is. I'm an African mom and raised by a strong African woman. And cool. The story I love to tell is, if you take, I'm sorry, no offense to American moms, but this is me just giving an example. If you take an African mom and an American mom, which I'm kind of both now, and you tell them, and there's a child that tells each parent, right? Hey, I want to climb that mountain, right? The African mom will say, oh, when do you want to start? Tomorrow, let's go, you know? And the American mom will say, oh, you don't have a whistle, a compass, do you have the right shoes, do you have a backpack, we have to go shopping, you know? So, and did you train? You haven't trained for it yet. And do you have water? And do you have, you know, because it's a mentality thing. For us African, it's like, is that the goal? I don't care if we have everything we need. If that's the goal, no matter what, however we need to do it, let's go, you know? And so that's been my mentality. And that's how I'm kind of raising my kids. And they're slowly beginning to get it. Because what I'm telling them is, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. Don't wait for the most perfect conditions to live out your dream. You know, it translates to that. It translates to language that they can understand, because they have seen me. And by the way, let me put it this way. It's not about grit. It's not something you talk about. It's something you demonstrate. So my favorite line with my kids, in fact, I'm doing more talking here than I normally would with them. We say talk is cheap, you know?
Uh-huh. Yep.
So
yep.
You demonstrate. So I have done it in my life. I have demonstrated to them by doing certain things. We've piloted programs when we had nothing. We literally had a lean budget of this much and did this much, like a lot, right? And then people look at me like I'm crazy. Like, how did you pull that off? I've had that line in my life. If I were to cash in every time I had those words, how did you do it? How did you pull it off? I would be a millionaire now because of that African mom mentality, right? And my kids have seen it in action for the last 10 years over and over and over again. Yeah, it's the whole idea of the human spirit is way stronger than most people believe it is. You can push your limits so much further than you allow yourself to have the time. Most people don't realize that. We are such strong human beings. We won't go into the details on this call, but recording. But I could tell you this, the human spirit can withstand so much when you listen even to the stories of others. So much so that sometimes it's sad when I watch people limiting themselves.
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. There's so many things, this grit being demonstrated instead of talked about. That cuts and pastes into everything. Just stop talking so much. Show it. be it, do it, stop planning some of it. Like the ambiguity will always be there. I remember Colin Powell's son did a TED, I think it was a TED talk on ambiguity tolerance. And in the military, you go until you did, you got what you can, even if we're at 60% knowledge, go and learn and go and learn and go and learn. And it's kind of like a simple heuristic, but it's really easy to hold in mind. So if you feel stuck on a project, if you feel stuck on some creative endeavor you're on, or if your office is just stagnant, just begin doing it. Almost don't even talk about it. Mm-hmm. Just begin infecting the rest around you with your vibration. And it takes courage. And I loved your story about in the boardroom when that mentor of yours pulled you aside and said, "You stop apologizing now." I just love that. And you know, being kind of a butt-kissing yes man by nature, yes. I have been really working on this. So that resonated deeply with me. So thank you for sharing that. And so Elaine, I want to ask you, we're kind of running on time here. So last question to you is, at this particular moment, what's lighting you up the most? What would you like to share with some people? Yeah, what project has got you all excited?
I am really, really excited about grooming the next generation of young leaders. Jason, I am so sorry. I've lost hope in my generation and the one before that.
Yeah. All right. Well, good. At least you got some population.
I think we're all trees. I'm just kidding. Really, I haven't lost hope in us. I'm just kidding. I would love to hang out with you in Kenya. I cannot wait for you and I to roll out some sort of program in Africa. I am dreaming about that and it's gonna happen. I'm manifesting. You and I can talk about it outside of this recording. But I'm really passionate about what we've talked about today, which is right now we have about 64 presidential elections that are happening this year. And of those, it's scary to think about the cream of those, including our own, very own, right? Oh, yeah. Here in this country.
Oh, yeah.
And what the outcome might be and how that might implicate how you and I even live life itself. Yeah. I feel like there's a bit of a leadership vacuum where we're not really thinking creatively and critically about how we integrate wellness and leadership so that we can produce the next generation of effective leaders that are addressing the challenges that the world is undergoing right now. And I'm not discrediting what others are doing in that space. I'm sure there's a ton of really good organizations that are doing some really meaningful good work. But I will tell you, you and I need just another session just to talk about my global youth engagement program that's been launched at Global Tides Consulting with a specific focus on grooming the next generation of young leaders. There are specific things we're going to be doing to do that, to build that network. We will build it as a network. We will create a mentorship network that's connected to this group that provides mentorship over time. So no, I'm not opposed to the old guard providing insights as well. So we are going to tap into collective networks in an alliance that we're building to support this mentorship process that should happen to groom that next generation of young leaders that we need. So I'll tell you more outside of this, but thank you so, so much for giving me a chance to just talk about that and to share a little bit about my story.
You're welcome. And what you said there about this program for the youth and in this quantum age, in this quantum era that we're in, where it's actually both and. It's a paradoxical kind of age we're entering. And I love that you said new age stuff along with the old guard stuff. It's both. We need the wisdom from all of it to go forward. The masculine side, the feminine side, the old, the new. The new way is going to include a mature review of all of it and a mature deciding of what we need for the future. So I couldn't be more excited to see this evolve with you. And yeah, let's definitely talk about the Kenyan project. I know we've kind of planted that seed and I can't wait to kick that ball further down the field.
Me too. You're part of my manifestation this year. I see you in Kenya this year somehow. We'll figure it out.
We'll figure it out. Oh, this has been amazing, Elaine. Well, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your life story, your projects, and most of all, your contagious energy. We appreciate you.
Well, thank you, Jason. It's always always a pleasure, and I look forward to our next conversation. Thank you so much.
This has been a production of Evergreen Podcasts. Special thanks to our producing director, Bridget Coyne, and audio engineer, Ian Douglas. I'm your host, Jason Hinkle, thanking you for tuning in today and inviting you to like and subscribe to this podcast. Also, if you think this may help others in your personal or professional network, please share today's episode. Until next time, I wish you a calm, deliberate, and authentic week ahead.
Hi, my name is Sarah, and I want to tell you about my podcast called Can I Offer You Some Feedback? I'm a business consultant and executive coach with over 20 years' experience in change management, leadership development, and naturally providing feedback to high performers. My podcast is for those of you who have a complicated relationship with feedback, whether giving, receiving, avoiding, or seeking. Feedback is essential for our development. In each episode, you'll hear from real people across industries with their ideas, perspectives, and best practices on feedback. I'll also be sharing business bites with you, simple explanations of organizational tools, management techniques, and leadership philosophies that will help you and your businesses thrive. You can listen to Can I Offer You Some Feedback on your favorite podcast app or learn more at evergreenpodcasts.com.